Hey everybody, welcome to a little special edition of the Swiss Pats podcast. We're doing something a little different this week. This is an interview that will be on our Wednesday show. However, we want to release it a little early because it is time sensitive. His name is Daniel Salerno, and he is with Defair, which is a fashion company that is trying to produce sustainable fashion. And they have a Kickstarter campaign that is running out on Thursday, March 28th. So we wanted to get this out so you could listen to it on maybe if you want to donate. So without further ado, here is Daniel of Defair. All right, and joining us now is Daniel Salerno, who this is a pretty interesting sentence I'm about to say. He's an almost former physicist in Zurich who's now you're embarking into the fashion world. Is that fair to say? Yeah. You're making that easy transition from physicist to fashionista.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's a very normal transition to make.
Okay. So you're here for a thing called Defair. So briefly explain what Defair is, and then we kind of want to get into your background.
Okay. Defair is a fair fashion label. It works a bit differently to the traditional labels. It will work with local designers and local tailors. So the designs are made within Switzerland, and the final products are also made in Switzerland. The idea is to be an online store where we only produce to order, so there's no garment waste and no risk of overproduction. And then we'll cut the fabric to the customer's size, so also people will get perfectly fitting garments. Cut that in a central facility, hopefully in Zurich or around Zurich, and then send that to one of a network of tailors around the country, who would then sew it together and send it to the customer.
Okay, so we'll get more into Defair in a minute, but we got to go on the journey from how this guy from Australia, who got his PhD in physics in Switzerland, how did this journey begin? How did you first come to Switzerland, first of all?
Well, I actually did a master's in physics in Italy, in Rome. And at that time, I enjoyed Italy much more than Australia, and I wanted to stay in Europe. And then I was looking for opportunities after my master's, and I found a PhD in Zurich. And I was lucky enough to get that, moved to Zurich, and it turns out I like Zurich better than Italy as well. So
keeps getting better everywhere you move.
I'm not sure you can get any better, though. Like, once you're in Switzerland, like, where do you go from
Have
there?
You been to Cleveland, Ohio, by any chance?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, I'd hold off. So the idea, first of all, to go to Rome, I mean, is this, I don't know, I'm looking at you too, Susie. I mean, is this a lot of Australians kind of have this desire to get off the continent, or is it just a personal decision, and it varies from person to person?
I think it varies from person to person, but I find that a lot of Australians like to travel, and many of them will spend a few years abroad, usually in the UK or in America.
Okay.
I've even met a few while I was in Italy, not so many while I've been in Switzerland, though.
And how long have you been in Switzerland?
5 years.
5 years, yeah. Okay. And so I guess the thing that we have to go to really kind of tackle here is you have this PhD in physics, which I can't even spell physics. So the idea that you have a PhD in is pretty awesome. But why did you feel this? How did you have this pull to be one of the people who founded Defair?
Well, although I was doing physics, I was very interested in sustainability. And I think that was the driving key here. I wanted to make sure that anything I do is actually good for the world, sustainable, and then in particular fashion, it seemed like an industry with so much exploitation of humans because it's so labor intensive. And it just looked like all the things we needed were there. We didn't need to invent new technology to stop this happening. It everything's already there, just someone needed to do it. And that's what I was passionate about, making a difference in that sense.
So have you always been interested in fashion, or was this a kind of like a growing passion that you had?
I've kind of always been interested a little bit. I'm not overly into fashion. You wouldn't call me a crazy designer guy or anything. But especially living in Italy, where they're all fashion conscious, I picked up on that and really started to enjoy fashion. And then it really kind of hurt me to understand these beautiful garments you're wearing so close to your skin, they look so beautiful, they're actually produced in such ugly conditions.
Yeah. So how do people kind of find out about where their stuff is made or how it's made? That's just something I've always personally struggled with. Sometimes I think, oh, well, if it's Dolce & Gabbana, then it must have been made really carefully and thoughtfully. But maybe that's not always the case. Like, how did you find out about, you know, the clothing being made in maybe, in an exploitive kind of way and wanting to do something about it?
Yeah, so it all, I guess that it all started with the collapse of the Rana Plaza in 2013, where over 1,000 Bangladeshi garment workers lost their lives. This made the news all over the world and brought the attention to everyone. And then there were more stories coming out like this. You know, the Made in Italy label that you see on a lot of the Dolce & Gabbana clothes are actually produced in these massive sweatshops in Italy, mostly with migrant workers working under terrible conditions. And so stories like this have been coming out. And once you know about it, you happen to notice all the other stories.
So when did it start that you decided to make Diffaire and kind of create this new brand?
So I had the idea in 2016. So I was with my girlfriend, who's a founding partner with us. We're co-founders. I had the idea to do something sustainable. She had the idea to do something with design. And then we realized that fashion was an industry where everything we needed was already in place. We just needed to do it. And so we decided to do a business course to see how to go about making a startup. And that was in the second half of 2016. And it all started then.
And there's four total people who are, quote unquote, the founders of Diffaire.
Yeah, then we're four founders. We had to, since neither myself or Valentina actually know how to make clothes, we had to recruit some fashion experts for this task.
Your girlfriend's name's Valentina?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we started looking for people who were experienced in this, and we got a great pattern maker on board. Her name is Susan. She's been working in the fashion industry for many, many years and is an expert pattern maker, has her own label, and agreed to work with us. And then we got a young graduate named Norga from the STF Swiss Textile College, who's into fashion design and is able to make clothes really well. And she joined the team as well. And so the four of us founded Diffaire in about August of 2018.
So let me get this time right straight. You're doing all this while you're finishing your PhD in physics?
Well, funnily enough, I finished my PhD in, let's say, February last year.
Okay.
And then I stayed on at the university part-time as a researcher.
Okay.
So I was able to spend half of my time on Diffaire and half of my time on physics.
Okay.
Since March of last year.
So we've already established that I can't spell physics. You mentioned the word sustainability, and, you know, that's something that I guess can almost be a buzzword nowadays, but can you explain what that means and how that applies to your project?
Yeah, so sustainability, there's a few aspects of it. A lot of people will notice the environmental sustainability first, but it's also about the business model and having a whole business that is socially sustainable and economically sustainable. But the first aspect, environmental sustainability, we take this to mean that the garments we use can basically fit into a cycle which can go on indefinitely. So nothing based on oil, which is going to run out eventually.
Don't tell that to us in America.
Yeah.
By the way.
And also is going to increase our global warming temperatures. So we focus on plant-based products that can be then recycled properly or even biodegrade back into the earth. And that way we can regrow those products and continue the cycle. So that's from an environmental sustainability point of view. Also, no toxic chemicals. We don't want to poison the earth or pollute waterways or anything like that. And then plastics is actually one of the problems with sustainability. A lot of people probably don't realize, but polyester sheds tiny microparticles of plastic every time you wash it. And so these will find their way into the water system, into the rivers and the oceans, and apparently fish are being found now with these microplastic particles in them. So aside from that, there's a, say, social sustainability, where we want workers to be treated fairly, to have the money and the means to live and to enjoy their life. And constantly exploiting the cheapest labor cost country is not sustainable.
Right.
So if we can do it in Switzerland, the high cost country, the place where the clothes are sold, that is sustainable by definition.
Does it ever feel like it's such a monumental task to be, you know, to incorporate all of those things into, you know, a brand? Like, it seems like so heavy, you know, to think about. Obviously very, very positive and very good, but, you know, it's, you got to think about, you know, where, you know, the kinds of material you use. Like, I did not know that about polyester, you know, so you I'm assuming using like things like cottons and, yeah, and things like that. You know, do you ever feel like, okay, so you've worked out one thing, we're not going to use polyester, we're not going to use things that use oil, and then you're like, and then there's another problem that we have to solve before we can even start creating?
Yeah, this is actually not so easy, because it would be much easier to focus on one thing and just do that, do it well, and it also makes a very clear message for your customers and the audience. But we, learning about this, we couldn't bring ourselves just to focus on one thing and ignore the others. So we really tried to, wherever we could, to do the right thing, to do the most sustainable thing for the environment and the people. And it is difficult. It is kind of heavy, as you say, to keep track of these and then to communicate them to customers as well.
Yeah, heavy, but also it seems, you know, very important to kind of the long-term outlook of the fashion industry, I guess. You know, people like you need to kind of get out there and come to people like Susie and I and like, guys, take a look at this. This is important. What else can you tell us about DeFaire as far as, you know, the styles or kind of, you know, how you guys are kind of constructed when it comes to serving a customer who wants to buy, you know, your clothes?
Yeah, so the styles are designed by an independent designer. Every 6 months, we'll have a designer working with us who makes a collection for us for men, women, and genderless. And these should be in the current styles in trend with the current trends. Customers will choose these. We will supply the fabrics to the designer. So we'll give them a selection of sustainable fabrics. We'll only offer them things like organic cotton, European tencel, which is a new wonder fiber, and these are sustainable, and the designer can choose the fabrics that they like. And that's what we'll be offering, and then the designer will have chosen those, and we'll offer these fabrics, these designs with these fabrics for the customers.
The other thing I do like, the website, which I want to get this right, is defaire.ch. And even on your crowdfunding page, which we'll get to, it lays out exactly why things cost what they cost. You know, so many times you go to a store and you look at these pair of pants and you're like, they're 199 francs. I don't know why, but that's what they are. Or this, you know, this shirt's 130, but it just is. Like, and this one's 80. I don't know why. But you give a very detailed list of why it costs what it costs. And that's, again, another kind of refreshing angle to the fashion industry that you guys are presenting.
Exactly. That's one thing as a consumer that I find annoying, that I don't know exactly, as you say, I don't know why things cost 200 francs or 250 and why this t-shirt should be more than that. I've learned that the expensive t-shirts are actually produced in the same terrible conditions as the really cheap ones.
Okay.
So I thought, since we are producing in Switzerland with all these costs quite elevated, the best way to convince customers that it's worth this price is to show them exactly what we're paying for everything.
Yeah. And I mean, it's everything from not only the materials to what you're paying the models to, like, everything is right listed there.
Exactly. Yeah. We want to make sure all the costs are included in this breakdown so that people know exactly what we're spending their money on.
So you mentioned that you do clothing for men, women, and genderless, and I'm very interested to hear why you've gone down the route of genderless clothing.
Yeah, this is probably Valentina's idea, and something that she's very passionate about, and I'm also all for it. Traditional clothing is just for men and for women. You have a female style and a male style, and some people just don't fit into these this binary gender categories. So we've given something where a new category, which is open for both men and women and everybody else to purchase from, and it will specifically cater also to those who do not identify as either male or female.
And every designer that you use, as you said, you'll have a different one every 6 months. Each of them will create a line that is genderless as well.
Yes, so the idea actually would be to have one designer doing the male and the female collections, and then another designer doing the genderless collection. So to start with, we might have one designer doing all three, but eventually we would like to separate this to have a perhaps even a high-profile designer doing a higher type of fashion for the genderless category.
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting. Even though, obviously, I shop in the women's section, when I went to your website, the genderless stuff was the first thing I clicked on. And, you know, I identify as a woman, but I actually quite enjoy that kind of style. So it's not even necessarily, I'm assuming that the goal is kind of for anyone to, you know, to wear those clothes. It doesn't matter what you identify as or anything. It's just, you know, do you want something that is genderless? Then this is the button. I actually loved clicking on it. I thought it was great. So thank you for doing that. You also are vegan as well, aren't you? I don't know, maybe personally, but the clothing is vegan.
The clothing is vegan, yes. Unfortunately, I'm not vegan at the moment, but I'm probably getting there. But the clothing is absolutely vegan, so we do not use any animal products, and you know, not even a label made of leather or not even a bit of fur on any part of the clothing.
What about, that's interesting that you mentioned fur, this is not one of my notes, but you said it, so I'm going to throw it in there. Fake fur, what's the company's stand on that? Because I know sometimes there's been like news reports where they do tests on fake fur and it turns out fake fur isn't actually fake fur, it's really from rabbits or something like that. I mean, you just stay away from all of fake fur, real fur, or?
For the moment, we're staying away from fake fur as well, mostly because it's if it is genuinely fake fur, it's made of polyester or something
right.
like that.
Right, so, there you go. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. There you go. There's that polyester.
So you guys are up against a little bit of a deadline. Can you kind of explain the crowdfunding that's going on right now with Defair?
Yeah, sure. So we've got our first mini collection designed by Esther Annan. She's created a great T-shirt, pullover, trousers, and a dress for us. And this is how we want to get started in the world. And we're offering this collection at the moment through a crowdfunding campaign. The idea is that we need to raise the money to be able to buy the fabric in large quantities up front. And then we can produce this collection and offer it to the people. And then this will prove our production methods. It will prove our design and our pattern adaptation methods and all that, and basically set us up for a proper collection to hopefully happen later this year.
Okay, and how could they find out information about that?
So on our website, defair.ch, you can find a link directly to the Kickstarter campaign. And then everything about the four garments we're offering is listed on the Kickstarter campaign. It breaks down the costs of each item, the materials that go into it. And then they can support us on the campaign and hopefully pick up a garment or two. And we should be able to produce and deliver these by July this year.
Okay. All right. Well, Daniel, we really appreciate you coming on. This was a really good conversation. A little eye-opening, I guess, for me. It was really well done. So thanks for coming on. Good luck to you and good luck to Defair.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.